Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture, and ideas. And today we're going to be talking about food. It's not quite the food show that you might be used to, but something that brings a kind of critical framework on what popular culture represents food as today. So with me is Taina Zanetchi. She is a postdoc student at UKM Kita, professor at the University of Brasilia, looking at tourism. She's also the author of From Our Grandmother's Pans to Haute Cuisine. And we're going to be talking to her about her critique of the ways in which food are presented in popular culture. But before that, Taina, I want to thank you first for joining the show. And I want to get a sense of who you are, your intellectual journey. So you have a PhD in rural development, but you're here in Malaysia doing research. So tell us, how did you get from Brazil to Malaysia? It's halfway around the world.
Yes. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. Yes, it's a long, long journey. But, you know, food connects everything. So I'm here as a great admirer of Malaysian culture and also curious about the food system of Malaysia and Southeast Asia. And so I'm here basically studying that because we have so many similarities with Brazil and Latin America because, you know, we were all colonized by Portuguese and Europeans. So I'm like researching this way of colonization ingredients and their impacts of contemporary food system.
Right. So food system is very interesting, and you are, like you said, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you have your PhD work in rural development. You know, in this bookstore we're here in Petaling Jaya at the Garabudai bookstore, there are a lot of books, but mostly what people want to consume here is politics. And there is politics in food, isn't there? And, you know, you talk about food systems. Why is it that you got interested in it? And what kind of things did you bring to that interest that you had in rural development?
That's a very good question because when we think about food, many people don't relate with politics. But, you know, it is politics and don't eat is also politics, you know. Many people say, oh, you know, hungry is a problem of production of food, and there's no way of we accept that because we have lots of food and we have lots of food waste and we have lots of food starving. So that's a political thing. That's not a production thing.
Right. So that's more about distribution and ownership and profits.
Yes, and also about choices, you know, food choices, because we think as individuals that we have the power of choosing our food, but that's not true also because what it's coming to us about food, it's had a long journey of others' power and distribution choices of governments, enterprises, big financial groups that decided what we're going to eat. So basically, we have 5,000 of different fruits to eat, and we are stuck in like 20 species. So
yeah, the lack of diversity. But before we get into that, I want to come back to you as a person. Brazil is huge, so maybe you can help us locate you in terms of this huge country that is Brazil.
Yes, Brazil, you know, big. It's a big country, very biodiverse. And we have six biomas that is like, biomas is like something like ecosystem. So we have six big ecosystem. And I am located at Cerrado ecosystem that is in the center of Brazil. And it is present in the 19 of the 27 states of Brazil. So it's huge.
Is that near the Amazon? Because if you want to find an equivalent for Brazil, we'd say Amazon, because and television, of course,
yes,
often highlights the Amazonian forest and its issues, but also its diversity and its culture. Are you in
yes,
the Amazon?
Not near, but yes. Cerrado Bioma makes borders with Amazon. But Amazon is in the north of Brazil. Here's Brazil. Here's Amazon. Here is Cerrado in the center. And then we have Pampas that near to Argentina. And we have Caatinga. All the coast of Brazil is Mata Atlântica. Here in the side, we have Pantanal. And I think that's it.
Okay. So these ecosystems represent also available species, indigenous species. In terms of Brazil, how much of the landscape has been altered by farmers, by big agriculture coming in terms of its biodiversity and the food production?
That's a lot. I mean, the coast, in Mata Atlântica, we just have 80% of the native forest. The other 92% was, you know,
only now it's farms.
Yes. And Cerrado, we only have like 60% of the nature, native nature still stands, you know. The rest is soybeans, beef and corn.
Okay, so I need beef and corn. And you know, this is a story all over the world, right? The reduction of diversity and how it comes out food. Now, I want to ask you, because, I'm just referring to the book, right? From Our Grandmother's Pans to Our Cuisine. It's already telling us a story that food is also gendered, that there is a deeply, and I think popular culture is responsible in part for this, a kind of sexist notion of haute cuisine, the high end of food production and presentation, right? So why is it that you were interested in the gendered dimension of food?
That's individual, like an individual, like a woman, first. I noticed that first, what is my model of cuisine? It was my grandmother and not my mother. That's interesting because my grandmother was in a generation that they used to be at home cooking. My mother generations, no, I don't have to cook, I don't have to do anything at house because I am a strong, independent woman. So I will not do domestic service. So I grew up with these two models that helped me that I could balance both and I could bring cooking to professional. So I am graduated in gastronomy and I suffer a lot of prejudice in gastronomy because I was a woman and because I am like that, you know. Oh, but you are a Barbie in the kitchen. Do other stuff, go do fashion or something like that. And I noticed that they don't want woman inside the professional kitchen. They want woman in the salon, making conversation, being a hostess, but not in the professional. You know, it's a man's world. It's hard.
Okay, so you know, so this is it. Does your book tell us about how men came to dominate the kitchen? Because we know in the domestic sphere, the kitchen is seen as the woman's realm, right? I mean, that's
yes.
The traditional
mm-hmm.
notion, right? How did the restaurant become the man's world? I mean, how did that shift happen?
Like almost everything. You know, when we talk in a professional level, in when we were talking about our home services, and we have this idea of love and taking care, you know,
we have the nurturing,
you feeding. We think about a woman. Oh, a woman can take care of it. But when you're talking a professional, oh, who is bringing the money? Who is bringing, you know, to another level? We think about men because that's our patriarchal system, and that's okay.
It's not okay.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay. But that's what it is, you know. So what I talk in that book is it's two great process that is happening. One is men, chefs that is men, almost white men, the saviors, okay, superheroes. They look at the grandmothers and, oh my God, she cooks so well. She taught me so much about love, into her food. No, I, you know, I'm going to do this in my restaurant. Okay, that's so beautiful. And also, they look at the traditional ingredients, traditional recipes, and, oh, you know, I'm going to make this like art, you know, like it's a process of art because I am an artist, you know. And they pick these memories, pick this savoir-faire of this generous woman and take it to the kitchen and say, oh, I learned with my mother, but, you know, because I'm a chef, now I can put some art in this. And this become like a huge thing. So, but this mother, this grandmother, is still at home without no voice, no television, no money, you know? And what they are talking about, oh, it's care, it's love, it's unpaid work.
It's unpaid work. That's very interesting. I do say that, you know, when one thinks about Latin America, right, and say the literary output, the magic realism, I think of Isabella Allende's, I think it was a book, right?
Yes.
Water for Chocolate, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is a brilliant, I mean, it's a very evocative image, right, that somehow that feelings come into food, you know, the feelings of the person who cooks come
yes.
into food. So there's a bit of a romanticization, isn't there, of food, even the role of women in the creation of food. But women tend to be on the side of nature, not of culture. They're on the side of tradition, not of modernity. They're the unpaid, whereas the male chefs get paid huge salaries. I mean, that is the division. What was the kind of reception you got to your book when you wrote this? You know, were you breaking new kind of in terms of the discipline? Were you advancing an argument that hadn't been made before, or were you part of some larger discourse?
My book was really well accepted because it's a new discussion, you know. And as a woman, I'm improving each day in feminism and understanding me as a woman in the whole machism role. So I think I'm still improving in that book because it's a me process as a woman.
It's your own evolution.
Yes, yeah, my own evolution. And also this book not only treats about gender, but also about the local products, local foods. I talked about this with you earlier, that we should not call food products, because when you do this, when you talk about agribusiness and not agriculture, not products instead food, you are accepting that who can buy food would be able to eat, and that's not right, because food should be a human right. So we should all be politics about this.
Okay, so we're going to put this guy, I'm going to come back to this conversation about the commodification of food, but also the commodification of the idea of food, which is there in popular culture. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with more on Let's Talk. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, my guest, Taina Tonechi. She is a Brazilian researcher, a professor of tourism at the University of Brasilia, but somebody who did a PhD work on rural development. She's the author of a book, From Our Grandmother's Pans to Haute Cuisine, a book that critiques the way in which food is presented. And you just went through some of the major arguments in your book. I want to come to popular culture because I think it's been very powerful in spreading the message about food. And there's some really good messages, the need to go beyond animal protein. And so there's the vegan movement, and all kinds of movements are represented. The Asian Food Channel, it's just wall-to-wall stories and narratives about food, right? But there was one, Taina, that really struck me, and that was a series called The Chef's Table, which I think in some ways exemplifies the arguments you've been making, which is about the heroic journey of the chef as they discover, the that they themselves need to evolve. And a lot of them evolve from, yes, you know, notions of French fine dining, and they came to their own. Often by returning to the past, returning to something that predated them, you know, in terms of time. And so the return to indigenous ingredients, all these things become part of the story that Chef's Table tell. There is, of course, a segment on Brazil, but there was more. It was a global story of a heroic male, very often white male chef, right? So, okay, let's start there. When you look at popular culture and what it's doing to our notion of food, what strikes you most?
That's a problem, because when you talk about food, we don't talk really about food. We talk about the materialization of food. And we don't talk about food choices, food system, trajectory of the ingredient, you know. We really don't know nothing about the food we are eating. And so they pick the, about, it's becoming to start a gastronomic process, that gastronomy starts to be a great thing, you know, again. And people, oh, look, the ingredient, look, the quality of food, oh, look at the taste, let's think about it. But actually, people don't spend so many time thinking about food and buying food and cooking. So, you know, chefs became like a guru of food. So they pick up the role of the chef, like he's the food guru, and media takes the chef and put him as a political actor of food. So, okay. That tells us some narrative, because who is the better person to talk about food? It's the farmer, because he grows food for many, many, many generations. And why did the media and the society pick up the chef as a guru food?
Yeah, why, you know? Is it? I mean, is why? It because... okay, is it because the farmer isn't a natural hero? Because we like the individual as opposed to what would be a collective of farmers. What is it that appeals, do you think, to the sensibility of modern media that creates narratives like you suggest?
In my research, my PhD research, I discovered that the chef are centered in a whole power relationship with other powerful structures. So they are related to politicians, big movie stars, big television stars. They are rich, you know, they have so many power that the farmers don't. So they have a natural voice in the urban society that the farmers don't. And people want to know about food, wants to know about nature, but with the urban filter, you know. That's why I think the chefs and this narrative of, oh, I'm related to nature, I'm related to tradition, I'm related to the farmers, get so stick in our society, because we don't really want to know that in farmers or rural areas people are struggling, people are starving. We don't know, people don't want to know about this, they don't want to discuss. They want to see a beautiful food with contemporary aesthetics, with a white male man, you know, using his chef's jacket in the nature, you know, because this tells us a poetic narrative about food and not the real food system and with the real persons struggling, working.
Yeah, so this is other thing, right? So you're right, I agree. It's a very persuasive argument that you make, that at some point in our subconscious, there's something that we don't want to know. We don't really want to know that the things that we consume might be part of an exploitative system, for instance, right? We rather not know, because it becomes troubling ethically,
yes.
to consume something that was a product of exploitation. So then this other thing. So the contemporary heroic chef dips into the past, dips into rural Brazil, rural Malaysia, whatever it is, brings out a product that we can all enjoy without guilt. it seems to me, is the, yes, the point of the story.
Not all of us, because it's too expensive, you know.
That is true too. So the expense of it, and you know, in your presentation at the Urban Biodiversity Initiative talk that I attended, you know, you make this point that, you know, the fire ants that I think was represented in the Chef's Table episode on Brazil, you know, and it's something from the indigenous culture, is now put on a small slice of something with a bit of gold leaf and sold for $100 US, right? Yes, many of us could not afford that because it wouldn't be a very satisfying meal. I mean, it wouldn't be filling. It might be satisfying
but
in other ways.
It's an experience.
Right. And one of the things and then this is it, right? Food is an experience rather than nutrition, rather than a right, and so on and so forth. I do want to come back to Popoka. Are there counterpoints to this? Are there different ways of telling the story that you have seen in popular culture that is breaking with this narrative, that wants to tell the story differently?
There are many ways for us to be ethical, you know, with food, because for me that's this new type of gastronomy is a ethical problem, because it's a lot of appropriation and a lot of subvaluation of food and food actors. So I think it's possible for us to build together an ethical gastronomy, contemporary, aesthetical, you know, everything that we want about contemporary gastronomy, it's possible. But it's possible to be fair, it's possible to be clean, it's possible to be transparent. And for this, we have to build with the farmers, we have to build with the indigenous people, we have to build with the traditional communities and with the diners also. So the first thing is we have to build with them. And how do we do this? With the education. They need to know about gastronomy also. They need to eat well. They need to be well. They need to have financial possibilities, you know, to be happy, to be happy to be in the field. They have to have internet. They have to have access to many languages, because they need to be in the field because they want to, and not because they need to or they don't have any other possibility, you know.
Do you see in popular culture, in your country, for instance, people or individuals who are building those bridges?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
A woman. Of course, always a woman. We make things different. So there is a chef in Brazil. Her name is Teresa Corson, and I love her because she's a... she's a great woman. She has a restaurant. Now she closes the restaurant because she is, you know, very focused on developed rural areas. So she has this institute that is called Instituto Maniva, that is cassava, Institute Cassava in English. And she works with this education, gastronomic education for the farmers. And that's really nice to know, because she started to make this. Her menu was a big map of Brazil with the name of the farmers. So you look at the menu and you could contact the farmers. So she built a
map. A bridge. Okay.
Sorry for my English. She built this, and we could connect. We diners could connect with the farmers. Also in Peru, we have other project that is really nice, that is called APEGA. It's the Association of Gastronomic Chefs, Nutritionists of Peru. And they build farmers gastronomic schools. And it's not centered in the urban areas, because that's a mistake, but it's in the rural areas. So there is the chefs comes to the rural areas and educate and change and make some internship with the farmers. And they start to look at the food they are growing, and oh, there's so many possibilities with this food. It's not only an ingredient, it's not only food. It can be a meal, it can be a dish. So the farmers also start to understand that what he makes, it's something huge, beautiful, delicious, that can be reached in so many levels, not only at a house but also in a big restaurant or be important to another culture. Country. So okay. That's the...
Okay, we have maybe half a minute left. What would you recommend people do? They're excited by this conversation. They want to see how to move from this. Where would they go?
First thing, cook at home. Cook at home. When you start to cooking, you're going to think about your food. So you're not accept bad food. So you're going to the font, you know, you're going to talk to the farmers. You're going to their farmers. You're going to be very close to them. So, and once you're close to them, you are going to feel that you are also responsible for the food they are growing to you. So that's a mind-changing event, you know, when you start looking at your food differently. So I recommend that you start cooking, look at your ingredients, look at the farmers, and construct with them a relationship, a close relationship, and it's going to be very powerful.
Okay, powerful, transformative. Thank you very much for sharing your experiences and your thoughts and the frameworks, new frameworks to think about the way we think and view food. Thank you so much, Taina.
Thank you.
So I've been speaking to Taina Zanetchi. She is a postdoc student at University of Kebangsaan, Malaysia, at the Kita Institute, also a professor at the University of Brasilia in Brazil, the author of From Our Grandmother's Pans to Haute Cuisine, a book, I believe it's available in Portuguese, not in English yet. But at any rate, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm Sharad Kutin, only for Astro One.